Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with your host, the Honorable Sam Rohrer, President of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues impacting our economy, our homes, our churches, our culture, and our daily lives from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Stand in the Gap Today, transforming the culture one heart at a time.
Well, in 1682, William Penn, upon receiving land, which later became the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, he got it from the King of England. William Penn chose not to make himself king, although he could have done so. He had the ability to do so. Instead, he laid down his frame of government, which is what it's called, in which he identified 10 biblical principles necessary for a new nation to be formed based on the model of Israel of old, established by God himself. And I'm going to share those 10 principles with you in just a moment. But suffice it to say, William Penn called his hopeful model for a new nation based on biblical principles of free choice and self-government, he called that a holy experiment. It was holy because it was based on biblical principles. And it was an experiment because it had never been done before. Well, God answered his prayer for a holy experiment to become an example to the nations. That was his prayer. And that became the United States of America. His prayer was answered. But William Penn and the founders that followed his model made one point very clear. The experiment in self-government, a self-governing republic based on the Old Testament model of capitalism, could only begin, grow, and survive if the concept of the citizens and the leaders submitted themselves in the fear of God to following the Ten Commandments of God. Now, was an understanding of this warning of William Penn and the founders evident in the latest research from the American Culture and Faith Institute? Well, we're going to find out on this program today with our special guest and the initiator of recent research, George Barna. He's executive director of the American Culture and Faith Institute. And with that introduction, I'd like to welcome you to Stand in the Gap Today. I'm Sam Rohrer, and I'm accompanied today by evangelist Dave Kistler, president of the North Carolina Pastors Network and of Hope to the Hill in Washington, D.C., and Dr. Gary Dahl, executive director of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network and senior pastor of Faith Baptist Church in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Well, men, before we get into the research today with George on his latest research that he entitled Americans Favor Capitalism But Tempted by Socialism, let me read quickly the 10 principles necessary to begin and maintain a self-governing republic that incorporates the concept of capitalism. Now, these are what William Penn laid out in 1682 that really formed the foundation of our nation. Very quickly, they are these. Number one, understand the nature and the role of God as creator, judge, holy, and sovereign. Number two, understand the nature of man, that man is sinful and depraved. Third, understand the purpose for government. It is to enact justice, praise those who do well, punish those who do evil. Number four, understand the purpose for law. That law was made for the lawbreaker. It's the basis for determining of justice, and it's the basis for government. Number five, understand the natural tendency of government. That is to consolidate itself and to become ultimately dictatorial. Number six, understand the components of justice. That is truth, balanced with mercy, and applied equitably to all. That's justice. Number seven, understand the duty of citizens and leaders to protect freedom. Number eight, understand the need to build safeguards into the system because of the nature of man to be sinful and the nature of government to consolidate its power. Number nine, understand the need for a virtuous education of the youth. You got to teach them certain basic principles or you're going to lose it, is what they said. And then number 10, understand the need for an ongoing dependence upon prayer, because except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it, Psalm 127. And that's what Penn said, and that's what even Benjamin Franklin cited at the beginning of the Constitution. Now, with that, I'm going to lay that foundation down. I want to go to George right off and say, George, thanks for being with us today again on the program.
Well, it's good to be with you, and I'm looking forward to this discussion. That's a great way to open this up.
Well, George, I want to start right off here with you. And before you share, though, the findings of your research, I want to get that into the next segment. Just in a general sense, you heard those principles I'd laid down there. Is there any evidence to suggest that the 2,000 participants or so that were a part of your survey demonstrated any working knowledge of these 10 principles that I just cited? And if they had, would the results have been strikingly different?
Well, it's an interesting question because, Sam, basically what you began to lay down for us were the fundamental elements of having a worldview that's based on the Bible. And so really I interpret what you just asked me is, do the people that we interview who are a representation of people from across the country, do Americans have a biblical worldview? And essentially what we know from our ongoing research is that only about one out of every 10 adults in America has a biblical worldview. And our background testing on this particular sample in this survey found exactly the same thing. And so we know that, you know, people who have a biblical worldview have a very different perspective, a very different way of thinking about meaning and purpose in life, about truth, and about how they're going to live their lives in accordance with biblical principles. That's uncommon in America today. So when you lay out William Penn's 10 principles, that would be something that people with a biblical worldview would be not only familiar with and comfortable with, but something that they would hold as a personal standard that they're trying to live in accordance with. And when we do our research and compare the people, the 10% or so, who have a biblical worldview with the views and the behaviors of those who do not, we always find huge differences in both beliefs and behavior, differences in terms of how we look at what is success in life, what is meaning in life, what's the purpose of government, what's the appropriate behavior of government, how should a family be developed, and how should family parent their children, how would finances or money be handled, what's appropriate there, how to think about the role of the church, the local church, and the church at large in a person's life and in society, the content of truth and where you find it, all of those things we consistently find to be radically different between those two groups. So in direct answer to your question, you know, do people basically have a working knowledge of William Penn's 10 principles? Not today. Historically, the evidence suggests that in colonial America, nothing that he put on paper there would have been an eye-opener to people. Nothing that he put on paper in those 10 principles would have been deemed controversial. Today, it's exactly the opposite. I'm sure as you were reading that, many people who are listening, who are good people, that didn't understand that and had never heard that before. So, yeah, there is a big difference.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our program today, the theme is the latest research from the American Culture and Faith Institute. The title, George Barna, our special guest, he entitled this, Americans Favor Capitalism, but Tempted by Socialism. When we come back, we're going to dig in now to what the survey findings actually showed, and we're going to find out from George what he means when it says Americans favor capitalism, what that means, and we're going to talk about some implications. Stay with us, and we're going to be right back in just a moment. Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Here's what Dr. Jimmy DeYoung has to say about Stand in the Gap.
But I just feel compelled. This is an unsolicited testimonial that I want to bring to your audience. This opportunity that the people listening to you have to reach this nation with the truth, biblical truth, constitutional truth, has to be taken care of. The American Pastors Network, there's no parallel in all of America with that. The 425 radio stations, I mean, that's an unknown. And I don't know that anybody had put that kind of a network together to do what these guys are doing. And it's got a true focus as far as a talk program. Look at here. You've got a former politician who would probably still like to be a politician. You have a pastor of a church, and you have an itinerant evangelist that travels all over the nation making impact the way he is. Folks, you got to support Stand in the Gap Radio. I just wanted to pass it along because I'm so impressed with this ministry.
There's a silent but deadly cult spreading like a cancer among us. It's already martyred millions around the world and forced others into sexual slavery. That deadly cult is Islam. Pretending to be something it is not, Islam masquerades as peace but means submission. Yet most Americans are oblivious to this danger within. You can now learn the truth. You can get an attractive copy of What Every Christian Must Know About Islam this week for a gift of any amount from Stand in the Gap Radio. With key facts from previous radio programs and guests on Stand in the Gap Today, including former Muslims, now Christians, former FBI agents, and preachers. This quick read booklet tells you what you need to know, simply and clearly. What Every Christian Must Know About Islam, an original publication of the American Pastors Network and Stand in the Gap Radio. Yours now for a gift of any amount. Just go to standinthegapradio.com to order or write us at Stand in the Gap Radio, Box 83, West Main Street, Elverson, Pennsylvania, 19520.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
Surveys and research, if done accurately, reflect the attitudes and the views of people in a given class at a certain point in time. They're helpful for many reasons. And without a doubt, had this particular research, which George Barna will share in just a moment, hadn't been done a generation ago, even 10 years ago, regarding the understanding of capitalism, socialism, private property, or any underlying principle of our self-governing republic, I suspect that the results would have been strikingly different, and George actually did comment on that just a little bit ago. Nations and cultures, though, tend to be always moving. They're not static. They're like living organisms. The question is, what direction are they moving? Are they moving toward the principles of freedom or towards totalitarianism? Are they moving toward the principles of what God lays down or away from God? Toward truth or towards relativism? Well, in this segment, we're going to talk with George Barna, Executive Director of American Culture and Faith Institute, about what he means when he says Americans only favor capitalism but tempted by socialism. So, George, I want to get you back in here right off and say, give us the top line and the bottom line of the research you just completed. Why did you conclude that Americans only, in quote, favor capitalism?
Well, it was kind of interesting the way we did the research. I mean, first of all, the big item for everybody to understand and that precipitated this particular research was that over the last 2 or 3 years, we've been noticing that when we ask people whether they prefer socialism to capitalism, started out 2 or 3 years ago where we were in the low 30% range of people saying they would prefer socialism. And that was shocking enough. But over the last 3 years or so, we've seen that that proportion has slowly but steadily increased to the point where today 40% of American adults that say they would prefer socialism to capitalism. Now, it's important to understand that you know, somebody's going to say, well, that's not across the board. It's true. As you look at different subgroups of the population, they all have different proportions which lean in that way. And what you find is that the millennials, the youngest adults in America today, those generally under the age of 30, are the ones who are most likely to say that they prefer socialism. What's most shocking about that is it's a majority of millennials who say they would prefer socialism. Now, that's meaningful for a number of reasons. Number one, they're the largest generation in America's history. Number two, they are the future leaders of American society. And right now, when you have 52% of them saying they prefer socialism, that should send up a red flag for those who believe that capitalism is the appropriate manner for America. Millennials, of course, are generally building their worldview upon postmodernism, so it may not be surprising, but I think it is frightening. Part of the other thing that comes out of this research is that we also discovered that the more that we talked with people about their preference, whether it was socialism, communism, capitalism, what we found is the more that we talked with people, the less sure they became about what they believed. And by the end of the survey, we asked them the initial question again, which one they would prefer. And we found that there was a tremendous softening of people's perspectives on this, with a huge proportion of them actually coming out, the largest proportion coming out, and saying they didn't know. So that tells us that people are really ill-informed about the systems of government, the systems of our society within which we live. And so there's a tremendous educational opportunity, and we have no time to waste in that.
You know, George, it's interesting that you use that word preference, and at some point in time, I think I'd like to dig into this a little bit with you. Preference versus conviction on worldview and even on capitalism versus socialism. But sticking with your survey, you found some interesting proportions in various population groups as it relates to socialism. And when I read over this earlier this morning, it was interesting what you found. In other words, you found that one out of every five political conservatives, that's 21%, leans towards socialism. Three out of 10 born-again Christians lean towards socialism. One-fourth of those who are theologically conservative, 24%, lean towards socialism. One in six adults with a biblical worldview lean toward socialism. 15% and more than 4 out of 10 residents of the South, that's 43%, lean towards socialism. I was interested in noticing there that 30% of those who call themselves Christian and 24% of those who call themselves theologically conservative are leaning towards socialism. It doesn't surprise me that only one in six adults with a biblical worldview lean towards socialism, but I don't even know how that one does it, to be honest. But having said all of that, out of all of these statistics and findings, which one most surprised you?
Well, honestly, maybe different ones than surprised you the most, Gary. I mean, the one that really shocked me was residents of the South, where you've got almost half of the people living in the South, 43%, saying that they would prefer socialism. To me, that's shocking, because when we look at the political map and we divide it into the red and the blue and the purple states, I mean, typically what we find is those are what we consider the red states. Those are the ones that would be considered typically to be most solidly conservative. And if we were to put a map on there of where we would find devoted Christians, the heaviest ink would be in the southern states, because that's where you find most of the people who still are most committed to Christianity. So, yeah, I was really surprised by that. The other one, I guess, that would get second place in that list would be political conservatives. Because when you think about what it means to be a political conservative, typically it has to do with fighting for freedom and independence, wanting limited government, government to have limited authority, people having more freedom. Conservatism usually has to do with self-reliance. It has to do with individual responsibility. All of those things are the antithesis of what socialism is about. So to find that one out of five political conservatives said that they would prefer socialism was also pretty shocking to me.
George, one of the things you do incredibly well is drill down below the numbers and try to find out, you know, not only the reason for why people are saying what they're saying that's reflected in your research, but you also sometimes find inconsistencies in people's response that we have found on this program to be very, very interesting. In this particular research that you did, were there any inconsistencies that you found as you drilled down into some of the responses?
Yeah, Dave, that's a great question, because actually one of the key things that we discovered, and it's in the report, is that we found that when we compared people's stated preference for either capitalism or socialism with a series of questions we followed up with about lifestyles and about governance choices, where we did not attach any kind of labels to those lifestyles or governance choices, what we found was that there was huge inconsistency, which tells us that people really don't understand what capitalism is or what socialism is. Perhaps it's just that they're not sold on one or the other, and so they'd like a more of a syncretistic form of government, but in all likelihood, we're not very well informed about these things. We found that people who say they prefer capitalism, only 17% of the time did they actually choose the capitalistic approach to a lifestyle and governance every time. The people who said they preferred socialism, there was only a 2% consistency in terms of the answers that they gave, which tells us that really they like the label more than they may like the substance of what socialism is. So a different way of saying all that is in 81% of the cases, people had inconsistent views given the stated preference of what kind of nation they want, capitalistic or socialistic. And again, I think this goes back to what we opened up the program talking about, which has to do with a person's worldview. When we study people's worldview from a spiritual perspective in America, we find that very, very, very few people have a consistent worldview. Even if they have a biblical worldview, there are elements of postmodernism and existentialism and many other worldviews that tend to creep in. And so it tends to be more syncretistic, where we've combined elements from different entities. So I think that's part of what we're struggling with here in America, is people don't really understand what it is. They like the label socialism, and I think the reason is because they believe that's going to give us a kinder, gentler approach to life in America. That's one of the things that Americans are looking for, and so they tend to think socialism may be the thing that gives it to us. And if it does that, it may help to unite the country. People right now, the vast majority of them, believe the country's on the wrong track. We're moving in the wrong direction. They're dissatisfied with government. They're looking for leaders who are going to heal the divide that we have in America today. And because they know, perhaps, that we've been a capitalist nation, but also because they've been bombarded with information from the prior administration as well as the mass media, they tend to believe, yeah, maybe socialism would be a better way to go, because what we're doing right now, in their eyes, isn't working.
George, what you just laid out there, quite a mouthful, and we're just I'm not going to be able to follow up with another question for you right now. We'll save some of that to the next segment. But I wonder if they could even come to an agreement on a common definition of socialism and capitalism. Based on what you're saying, probably not. But in any regard, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking today with George Barna, Executive Director of American Culture and Faith Institute, with the latest research results entitled Americans Favor Capitalism But Tempted by Socialism, Ill-Informed About Both. Stay with us. We're going to come back after the break, and we're going to take and go to this very basic question. Is the American Republic facing extinction? With all of this nonsense and people understanding and not understanding, can we survive as an American Republic? We're going to cover this when we come back. Stay with us.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, discussing the pressing issues facing our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Now let's rejoin our host.
Well, welcome back to Stand in the Gap today. This is Sam Rohr, accompanied today by Dave Kistler and Gary Dahl, our special guest, George Barna, Executive Director of the American Culture and Faith Institute, which you can find at their website of culturefaith.com. And I encourage you to go there. You can sign up. You get the reports that they release monthly, and take advantage of that. Very, very excellent. And if you're just joining the program, again, thanks for being with us. The program, this one, all of our archives can be found on our website at standinthegapradio.com. Go there, listen to them, and when you're there, you can forward them along to your friends. Also, the app, which you can get free app, just put in the phrase Stand in the Gap, You can listen then to this program, our Stand in the Gap weekend program, our minute program, and access a host of other pieces of information via that app in your hand. You can listen to programs, start and stop it at your convenience. Very, very convenient. And you can also send it along to your friends. Encourage them to listen to this program. If you are being benefited, my guess is they will too. So try to do that. And I just encourage you strongly. All right. Now, moving further into the implications of this research, as we've been finding, when you have a near majority of Americans actually lean socialism, we're in trouble. The extraordinary lack of understanding about basic principles of government, understanding of God, the concept of right and wrong, and a host of things seem to mark our current American 21st century culture. Unfortunately, as we've talked many times in this program about, this lack of understanding is not limited to just non-church people, but also it's finding its way into those who identify themselves as Christians, although in that segment it's normally to a slightly less degree, but it's there. The real facts seem to indicate that our nation is moving at breakneck speed away from God, away from freedom, away from truth, really into the hands and the arms of totalitarianism, where our founders were so fearful about. And we're moving from our national heritage at such a speed that when you look at the numbers, it causes you to think of this. Can our nation long survive? So in this segment, I'm going to talk with George Barna about the implications of this most recent research. Again, the title that he titled it, Americans Favor Capitalism, but Tempted by Socialism, but They're Ill-Informed About Both. George, I want to get right in to this and ask you straight out. In your opinion, as a long-standing researcher, social science researcher, doing things in the church, outside the church, all across this nation for a long time, based on the findings of this latest research and others, is the American Republic as we have known it facing extinction? And if so, unless something intervenes quickly and deeply, how long do we have until we join the dustbin of history like so many other great empires have done?
Yeah, it's kind of a scary question to even think about that, Sam, but I think it's the right one for us to be asking given the results of a survey like this. Now, I think if we're talking about whether or not we're going to go extinct as a democratic republic, that was and has been for more than 200 years based on biblical principles, I would say, yeah, I think that's abundantly possible when you look at many different factors that play into that. You look at the fact that the fastest growing faith group in America are the people who say they have no faith and they want no faith. When you look at the fact that only 10% of Americans have a biblical worldview, when you look at what it is that our church is considered to be success in ministry, when you look at what people do and do not know about the government systems and all of the social institutions that form the framework of what has made America such a great nation for so long, I would have to say, yeah, it is certainly possible. I don't think it's going to happen overnight, but if we look at the momentum that takes place in a culture, the momentum is on the side of America shifting from what it has been traditionally to what people think they may want it to be in the future. The challenge here, I think, is that the basis for decision-making, which is what we would call a worldview, is that most Americans do not equate their worldview with having anything to do with politics or government. And so we've got the difficulty of even Christians think of buying into the secular idea that you have to separate faith and the rest of your existence, including politics and government. Now, I would also, however, say that the hope for us being able to pull America back from the brink here is the levels of confusion and ignorance that we're measuring. And I don't say that to be derogatory toward the American people. It's just an observation based on the data. We really don't know what it is we're talking about when 40% of us say we want socialism. And, you know, apropos to your comment at the end of the last segment before the commercial break, you know, could people give us a solid definition of socialism or capitalism? No, I've got the research. I can definitively show you that people really don't get what either one of those are. And right now, they're simply looking for different kinds of things in life, a much more superficial understanding of how to live. They want to be happy. They want to be free. They want to be safe. They want to be comfortable. Those are the things they're looking for, but they haven't put it together with, yes, but what are the responsibilities that you have to take on? What are the commitments that you have to embrace in order to live in a place where you could hope to have those kinds of outcomes?
George, last week we did five programs on the topic of Islam, and one of those programs actually was the discussion of the infiltration of Islam into the Church of Jesus Christ. It's stunning what is taking place, has taken place. So obviously, over the last number of years, the targeting of public education and the media, the rewriting of history, the continual demeaning of Christianity, biblical standards, even the infiltration of Bible colleges and seminaries by Marxists, communists, those on the left, obviously they've been very successful in their infiltration. So my question to you is this: what has the church not done well, or maybe even better worded, what is it the church needs to do much better, significantly better, if we're going to have any chance of keeping, as Sam asked you earlier, keeping America from going to the dustbin of history?
Well, again, a great question there, and it's because I think our churches have kind of fallen into the same kind of confusion and distractions that the rest of the society has been prone to. So when we look at, you know, what the church has and hasn't been doing, we have not done a good job of raising up each generation with a solid foundation in the fundamentals of the Christian faith. People do not know how to think about whether or not God exists. They don't know very much about the character of God. They know very little about the mechanics of sin and salvation and how the Bible talks about the interplay of those. People don't buy into the notion that the Bible provides truth and that, in fact, in many situations, there is absolute moral truth. It's not relative to the individual and his or her circumstances or feelings. They don't understand the different spiritual authorities that exist and the fact that we live in the context of a spiritual battle between those spiritual authorities. So, I mean, those very, very basic things for a worldview, the church typically doesn't teach on those things. There are many churches that do it, but when you look at the 320,000 or so Protestant churches, the 20,000 Catholic churches that we've got across America, those aren't things that they focus on. Mm-hmm. Now, that's compounded by the problem where we tend not to help people think about and hold them accountable for integrating biblical principles into every dimension of life. This is the application of our faith, not just the knowledge and understanding of it, but taking it and making it real from moment to moment in our lives. Instead, what we've been led to do by the society and allowed to do it in many cases by our faith communities is we compartmentalize our faith. So we're Christians on Sunday morning, but the rest of the week we're worried about making money, about having free time, about feeling good, and so forth. So, you know, bottom line here I'd say is that part of what we've lost is the boldness of the church in the marketplace. What we've done is we've accommodated our opponent's notion that there should be a separation of church and state, meaning that religious elements, our faith, should not be evident in the marketplace. When in point of fact, that's not in the Constitution, it's not what the framers of the Constitution believed, it's not something that would have served our nation well as it was getting off the ground, it's not right. In fact, we need our faith to be integrated into every nook and cranny of our culture and of our individual lives. We cannot afford to be timid. We need to protect the opportunity to have our faith be integrated into every dimension of life. And that's not something the church has done well. What's happened is that we've almost become like salt that we just throw on the corner of a steak. Mm. And so we're just seasoning that one little portion rather than seasoning the entire landscape.
You know, George, we're about out of time for this segment, but I've just finished a 4-week series on the biblical worldview as I do so often in my preaching ministry here at Altoona. But, you know, I just want to say to those listening, pastors have a great responsibility, do they not, to teach the components of a biblical worldview. And back in 2005, I think it is, you wrote a book entitled something like Thinking Like Jesus. What's that, George?
Yeah, it was Think Like Jesus.
Think Like Jesus. It was an excellent book, and I'd encourage everybody and anybody to get that. It gets them on track as it relates to the biblical worldview.
Ladies and gentlemen, stay with us here as we now enter into our fourth break in just a moment, or fourth segment, and we're going to talk about this. How did we get into this mess? Expand upon this just a little bit, and then we're going to talk about the way out. Is there a way out? The answer is yes, but we'd better get right to it. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
There's a silent but deadly cult spreading like a cancer among us. It's already martyred millions around the world and forced others into sexual slavery. That deadly cult is Islam. Pretending to be something it is not, Islam masquerades as peace but means submission. Yet most Americans are oblivious to this danger within. You can now learn the truth. You can get an attractive copy of What Every Christian Must Know About Islam this week for a gift of any amount from Stand in the Gap Radio. With key facts from previous radio programs and guests on Stand in the Gap today, including former Muslims, now Christians, former FBI agents, and preachers. This quick read booklet tells you what you need to know, simply and clearly. What Every Christian Must Know About Islam, an original publication of the American Pastors Network and Stand in the Gap Radio. Yours now for a gift of any amount. Just go to standinthegapradio.com to order or write us at Stand in the Gap Radio, Box 83, West Main Street, Elverson, Pennsylvania, 19520. Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com. Listeners all across America are thanking God for Stand in the Gap today. Listen to what Carol, a faithful partner from Southeast Pennsylvania, says about Stand in the Gap today.
Hello, my name is Carol, a regular and faithful listener of Stand in the Gap Today, a daily one-hour program heard Monday through Friday. The program hosts talk to interesting and fascinating guests who will discuss some of the most important issues of our day and time from a constitutional and biblical worldview. I hope you will join me for Stand in the Gap Today, a daily one-hour program heard Monday through Friday. You'll be so glad you did. And remember, the American Pastors Network covets your prayers and financial support.
Thanks, Carol. Your prayer and financial support of this program has helped us to become the main source of trustworthy news analysis for so many people. If you're listening to me right now and you've never contacted us like Carol did, would you do so now? Partner with us in prayer and finances by going to standinthegapradio.com. And if you're benefiting from this program, tell a friend.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Research and knowledge does no good if it's not well considered and then applied. But research properly done should provide data that not only points to where we are at a moment in time, but over time to tell us how we got to this point and how things must change if the findings are to be altered. Now, in the case of the findings of this research about Christians and the Americans' views towards socialism and capitalism and their attitudes and their knowledge towards not only the definition of capitalism and socialism, that we know now is not understood, but the application of the underlying principles that undergird that as they relate for instance, to the purposes and the function of government or the role of the church and the family. They know that even less. So the question is, how do we get here, and is there a way back? So in the solution segment here, as we wrap up the program from today, I'm going to go back now to our special guest, George Barna, Executive Director of the American Culture and Faith Institute, to talk and ask you, George, now this. When did the shift in our cultural understanding of economics, the role of the church, the role of government, these things we're talking about here that come to bear on your research, socialism, capitalism, when did these things actually begin to fundamentally change? And in your opinion, what was the primary cause for that change?
Well, you know, it's one of those realities where none of this happens overnight. And so if we're going to talk about how this change has progressed over time, we've actually got to go back, I believe, to the turn of the 20th century, where when Woodrow Wilson was elected president, in essence, he was our first socialist who took office in the White House. He put in a number of different programs, introduced a lot of different perspectives. A few years after his presidency, then a couple presidents later, you had Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR, who brought in his New Deal kinds of programs, and he used the wartime as his excuse for giving government more power, for taking more freedoms away from people. You jump ahead a few presidents, and you've got Lyndon Johnson. After John Kennedy died, he took over as president, so he finished out Kennedy's term. He had his own four-year term. So while he was there, he had what he called the Great Society programs, and there again was a power grab and a money grab by government and by the people running the government. And then, of course, you had President Obama, Barack Obama, for 8 years very recently, who continued and advanced that socialist agenda. From a political point of view, that's kind of the stepping stone that we've had to where we're at today, with their idea that the people are not smart enough and they're not capable enough of governing themselves. What we really need is the elites, the intelligentsia, who can fill those positions of power and authority and make the key decisions. But that wouldn't have happened if you didn't have churches losing their standing in the culture. And that really began around the 1970s, where suddenly, instead of focusing on spiritual depth, we had churches beginning to focus on church growth. And so there were all kinds of movements, the seeker movements and other things, which in and of themselves weren't bad, but what they did was they took their eye off depth of spirituality and making real, genuine disciples, and instead became very responsive to coverage by the media, very concerned about whether or not they could grow large enough to be considered a mega church. And all of that, with a reduced teaching on scriptural truth, then allowed the culture to change in terms of its values and its worldview. Our values shifted from things like truth and obedience to things like comfort and popularity. Our worldview went from being predominantly a biblical worldview to more of a postmodern worldview, which says there's no absolute moral truth. All that matters are the experiences that you have, the connections that you make with other people, how you feel about yourself. Your feelings are supreme, rather than any kind of dedicated truth. So that, I think all of that, you know, kind of started coming together in the 70s and has progressed since then without much opposition. And that's what's put us in the situation we're in today.
Seems to me I recall somebody wrote a book entitled The Paganism of Christianity. Have you ever heard of that one, George? And maybe people ought to get it out and read it. It's another George Barna book. But, you know, it's interesting you talk about President Wilson. I have often wondered, and maybe you can draw a connection here, I don't know, but I've often wondered if the philosophy that Woodrow Wilson put out for us in this nation has itself actually led to the demise of biblical truth that we see over the pulpit that you talked about in the 1970s. I kind of think that there's a relationship between the two of those, and I know we don't have time to delve into it today, but you know, when we started the program, we listed the 10 principles cited by William Penn necessary for the beginning, growing, and maintaining of a holy experiment of self-government. And so my question to you is, what will be required for those foundational principles to once again become known and become recalibrated back into our culture so that we don't go down that road of extinction?
Well, again, another great question. I think there are a few critical elements. One is that we have to remember that our democratic republic hinges on what families do. If families are going to teach biblical principles to their kids, if families will hold their community and their political leaders accountable to biblical principles in what they're doing to lead us forward, that's going to go a long way towards solving the issue, because we can't rely on our schools, particularly at this point, to do that job, nor should we. However, our schools, which are simply an arm of the government, need to be responsive to parents. Right now, as you look at what takes place, schools tend to dictate to parents what has to be happening in the home, and it ought to be the reverse of that. So we've got to once again get control of that situation. I would say churches have a big role to play in this, and it goes back to what we've been describing, which is teaching worldview principles, biblical principles, so that people have a solid foundation through which they can make their decisions. A worldview is only a mental filter through which we make our decisions, and we've got to recalibrate that mental filter. Church leaders, I think, in addition to teaching scriptural truths to people and making sure that they get it and apply it, also have to boldly proclaim the gospel and all biblical truths in the marketplace. We've pretty much been silenced over the last quarter century, and you can see the dramatic negative impact it's having on our culture. So pastors have to stand up, they have to show that leadership backbone that God has given to them, and to use it in the marketplace, not to be ugly about anything, but to proclaim God's principles as the basis for our nation. And of course, we've got to hold our political leaders responsible for maintaining the kind of capitalistic principles, the democratic principles that the founding fathers put into the Constitution that have made this such a unique country for the last 250 years. And so to be able to facilitate and encourage individuality and the private sector having responsibility for what goes on in our culture, taking away some of that authority from government, giving it back.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've wrapped up our program for today talking to George Barna. We have a problem in our country. Do we face extinction because our people don't understand a biblical worldview? The answer is yes. So pastors, stand up. Families, parents, engage with your students, your children. Hold our political leaders accountable. Teach biblical worldview across the board. Those are the answers I hope that you got. I hope you enjoyed the program today. And we wish you to courage back and stand with us tomorrow as we talk about the Passover tomorrow. We're coming into the Easter weekend. You'll enjoy the program. Thanks for being with us today.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today. Stand in the Gap today is another quality ministry of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues affecting the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. We take seriously the command to be salt and light, and the mission to declare truth in the public square. Stand in the Gap Radio is supported through the prayers and tax-deductible financial gifts from listeners like you. Would you please consider a donation to help us increase our outreach of biblical truth? To learn more about us and make your donation, please visit StandInTheGapRadio.com. You may also give from our smartphone app. Download the Stand in the Gap app. Search for it in your web store under the heading Stand in the Gap. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in every weekday at the same time for Stand in the Gap today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.